Today in the Grave Talks, the power of the paranormal, a conversation with Matt and Laura Slies. Like many children, the idea of ghosts is something left for Halloween specials or spooky books and games. But for Matt and Laura Slies, encountering the paranormal was something that took place far off the screen or the pages of a book. It was real life. Today, we hear their stories of investigating the dead and where it's taken them through life.
It started for me when I was 3 years old. My actual first memory is of laying in my bed in my bedroom and watching my closet door open and close each night. And it seemed very natural to me. I wasn't scared of it. Got to the point where I expected it and waited for it before I would even fall asleep at night. And it happened at a house that my family lived in when I was born. And it's on West 111th Street in Cleveland, Ohio. Hence the name of our paranormal group, 111 Paranormal. From there, I just felt always an affinity towards the paranormal. I have been able to hear things, see things, feel things, and it never really stopped. It's only amplified over the years. And right now, I'm a medium, a psychic medium, but also I can see auras. I mean, I have a little bit of everything. It's an amazing time for me to be able to share it with people and help them out when I can, but also to go to sites where we investigate haunted locations or haunted homes and be able to communicate with those spirits as well.
So what was it like? Give me some details of how it felt at the moment when you're young and you're seeing this happen. Everything is new. So to a child, it's like, oh, I guess doors just do that, you know, and you don't necessarily know that it's paranormal at that moment. When in childhood did you realize this is not so normal? Did you talk to your parents about it, or how did that?
Which is really strange. I didn't talk to my parents about it. I feel like there was just this inherent sense that was my house and I belonged there, and it was very natural to me to experience otherworldly things. My whole family really did experience things there. When my parents would go on vacation, they would come home, and at the time, it was before I was born, there were four kids, and they'd walk up on the porch of this house and hear a baby crying. And not only them, but neighbors, everybody. And they'd go into the house and it would stop. And about 2 weeks of this, my mom found out she was pregnant with me and never heard that again. And so I always felt like I was there, and this was, you know, my mom having a child was the way for me to come back into this realm. So I just, it's really strange, but it felt very normal to me to be experiencing things in that home.
How interesting. Beyond the door doing that, was there any other thing that happened in that home?
Sure. Our family members would hear my mom call for us or say, you know, hey, you guys come into the house or something like that. And she wouldn't even be in the house. She'd be down the street with the neighbors having coffee or something. And we'd hear and actually see her, what we assume now was her doppelganger, yeah, in that house. She also felt very at ease in that home and never felt scared of anything. I think it's kind of strange how everyone in our family just kind of accepted that was the way of it. And many of my siblings and my mom are all paranormal investigators now as well. So I think it's just something that was in our family, and we didn't talk about it, but we kind of all accepted it, and everybody had different experiences.
Yeah. The ball. Get to the ball rolling.
Oh, my brothers had a room off the attic, and they would hear things in there under the bed all the time, just scratchings and bed shaking and things like that. my brother actually rolled a ball in under the bed and it stopped and then came back out. So lots of ways that I think that those spirits were trying to communicate with us. And I think they felt just as at ease with us as we did with them.
So it wasn't really a fearful thing at all. It was more almost like, you know, these are friends that are hanging out here that you can't see.
Yeah, and it felt like that all the time. So it was never scary to me. And even when, unfortunately, we had to leave that house, my dad lost his job and we were forced to sell the house. We moved into another house years later that we had the same experiences. And it was something where my mom walked in the house and said, "This is the one." And all of us had experiences. A woman had died in the home from a fire, and the house was gutted and then rebuilt from the inside. And we all experienced her. We experienced lights going on and off, furniture moving around. It was just the norm for my family.
Was there, and obviously you wouldn't know this at the time, but maybe talking later, was there any reservation in her buying the house that a woman died in a fire?
No, because when she walked into the front door, she immediately said, "This is my home."
Wow.
And it was like, they didn't even need to look at it. In fact, going back, the first house on West 111th Street, my parents didn't even go in the house. They bought it without even seeing it because they both felt like they belonged in that house.
So would you say, do your parents have abilities too that they recognize, or do they have abilities that you just know they have that they don't recognize?
Yeah, my mom doesn't necessarily like to recognize it. My father has since passed on, but yes, I would say that not only did they, but I kind of got this double dose because my dad's mother did and my mom's father did.
Sure.
And so they're all kind of like this. It gave me this sort of double dose of whatever each of them had. My father and I used to be able to communicate without even speaking. So that was always an interesting, and we didn't talk about it much because it was sort of the faux pas, but we knew it.
Yeah.
When things would happen, we would talk about that a little bit, but not much. Mm-hmm. And my mom has always had feelings of things happening, or she'd like get coffee from my dad before he, you know, and then a minute later she'd be walking with the cup and he'd say, "Hey, Lou, can you get me some coffee?"
Yeah.
You know, like things like that. And so she's always had this little spark. And even now where she is in her apartment, I think she's got a portal in there and she experiences stuff regularly. And I think it's because she's sensitive and she can see those things.
Yeah. I mean, is it necessarily the locations, or is it more so the ingredient of the people that have been added to the locations that spark them up?
I think it's a little bit of both. I feel like if spirits are there, you get somebody who's sensitive and they're just going to thrive. You know,
sure.
They'll come through, they'll talk, they'll move things. And lots of times when people who do believe in the paranormal and are in a place, they'll see, hear, experience. If you don't, you're going to just write those things off.
Sure. Hey, back to our conversation in just a second. Remember when you were a kid and you take your vitamins in the morning? Maybe you still do. I hadn't for a long time. But this is not a vitamin. This is something completely different. This is microdose THC. Yeah, microdose gummies. I've very much enjoyed them. When I read about like what they can do for you, creative boosts, help in sleep, help in pain, anxiety, all of these things that I deal with all the time, and there's different types for different things, I thought let's give this a try here. Now, microdosing is something that you may be somewhat familiar with, maybe not, but they're here to kind of help you along that path. It's completely legal in every single state, and Microdose Gummies is supporting our program today. They deliver the perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And like I said, there's all different varieties for all different needs. They really do taste and feel amazing. I've been using them to kind of help me get me going in some creative aspects when I'm working on shows. And I've also used some others when I'm trying to chill and relax and my mind just keeps going. And this kind of helps. It does help. All around, I'd say a 10 out of 10 for me. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code GRAVE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com and code GRAVE. When was it that you really recognized, you know, that this was different than other people? That you know, because obviously within your family, a lot of these things just seem to kind of be part of it. And, you know, maybe they didn't call it an ability or this or that. Maybe just like an intuition or whatever they wanted to say at the moment. To make it feel more normal. But when did you recognize that not everybody has these sort of things happening?
I would say it was probably when I met my husband, which was 16 years ago. Before that, I kind of wrote things off because it scared me a little bit. As you get it, you know, when you're a kid, you don't get scared, right? But when you're an adult, you learn to fear those things.
Sure.
From people around you. So I kind of just ignored stuff. It happened. I mean, I would feel things jump on the bed or feel things jump on the couch or sit down or whatever. And I just kind of wrote it off. But it's funny, when I met my husband, I felt safer. And I felt like I could then kind of delve into what was really going on with us. Mm-hmm. And things did start to happen, and things like our rug in our apartment would move from the kitchen sink to the front door, and it would be completely flat, and it was a heavy rubberized mat, you know? And we'd look at each other when we'd walk in the door, and it would be like, did you do that?
I didn't do it. You did. Did you do it?
And, you know, so just strange things like that, but I started to accept them more and realize that this was something greater. And, you know, Matt has been really supportive of that and kind of helping me figure out that I do have this ability and making me feel like it's okay to have that ability. Because in many circles, you know, 16 years ago, it wasn't.
Sure.
And nowadays, it's much more accepted. It's becoming really a great topic of conversation in circles now. And I feel more like I can be myself. For a long time, there were two of me. There was the, you know, the 8-to-5 job Laura, and then the paranormal Laura. And it feels like now, even when I'm at work, people will ask me, oh, can you read my cards? Or can you give me a reading? Or can you tell me what my aura color is? Or things like that. So it's sort of seeping in and everybody's sort of accepting it now, which is great. But we've been to other mediums. When I was kind of trying to learn my trade, we went to a few different mediums, and many of them, first of all, would sit back from me and not look at me and say, do you do what I do? And I would say, no, but I think I can. And they would say, yeah, you need to do it. And many of them said that Matt was my protector in this realm. And so it made sense to me because that's how it felt when we met.
Yeah. How interesting. Matt, how about you? Like, where did it all start for you? The interest, the spark in the paranormal?
About 16 years ago.
When you met her?
I mean, I had some experiences, but I didn't really count this. I didn't really count them too much.
Yep.
I didn't, they were, and you know, I wasn't really, you know, when I was a little kid, I remember going to the school library and reading about ghosts and things like that, you know, but then I saw, you know, other books where, you know, they kind of debunked some of those ghost pictures from like the 30s and 40s. But it wasn't really until Laura and I met that things started happening for real and that we couldn't explain. Like, for example, our first house we bought, she mentioned the apartment where things got moved, but in our first house, I was walking down the hallway and I just saw this blur go past me. out of the corner of my eye, peripheral, just this big black blur. And I'm just like, what was that?
Yeah.
Well, Laura had her camera with her and she took three pictures down the hall. And the first and third pictures came back normal, but the second picture had a black mass at the end of the hallway. It's like we couldn't explain that. And then we were goofing around. We were kind of, we were watching some of the ghost shows and everything. And we had a, we bought a digital tape recorder just to kind of goof around a bit. And she was in her office paying the bills. And I'm like, no, she pays the bills. And I'm just goofing around. So I take the recorder and I'm like, is there anybody here with us? Can they? And then when I played it back, you heard like this guttural, nasty voice.
Yeah.
And we shut that off and went, okay.
Yeah, that was before we got excited when we heard stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like, what was that? And funny enough, if you watch some of the shows now, we've heard the same kind of sounds that other people get on the on their recorders. So
sure.
So that was kind of an interesting experience, and then just kind of grew from there.
Did anything?
Our first. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did anything come of the guttural? Type thing.
You know, we bought our house not long, that was in the apartment I was mentioning, and we bought our house not long after that, so we had to move out, you know, knowing that the apartment was just a temporary thing. And it really is the spark for this paranormal, was that apartment. And after we moved, Matt worked real close to there. He went there to pick up our mail, and the mailman said that the people across the hall thought we were still living there because they were hearing people over there.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was really an amazing place. And it did get us into this whole paranormal field, really headstrong into it, you know? And then the house we had also was, I mean, I think it was, I don't think it was the place, like you were saying, I think it had a lot to do with us. And with Matt, coming into my life, it kind of sparked that intensity of my mediumship, and it just opened up some doors, you know?
Yeah. Now, go ahead.
And then I was just going to mention about the apartment too. Like one night, Laura was laying in bed, and all of a sudden she heard breathing in her ear, and it wasn't me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That there was a lot of, and I had my first.
Lights would go on.
My first experience with. A dream of who was in the apartment. And so I had a dream, I saw the person who was in there. It was a man, he was in his like 30s to early 40s, dark hair, like 6'2". Like I saw all of that.
Yeah.
And I woke up knowing that's who is here.
Sure.
And that was my very first experience of that. And yeah, the lights would go on, which was crazy because I was going through a bunch of issues with my vision at the time and surgeries and things like that. So I had a hard time seeing. And I remember saying to Matt, I was in my bedroom and I was saying to Matt, I can't really see good right now. He was in the other room and the light went on. And I was just like, well, thank you. Like, I just felt like it was a good thing that I had these experiences.
Yeah.
And then close to that apartment was a, this is kind of messed up because this land belonged to a family. Well, they built apartments. They also built like a movie theater and a shopping center. Well, in the smack dab in the middle of the parking lot is a cemetery. So I'm thinking maybe the cemetery was charging a lot of the area around there too.
So the cemetery literally still stands in the parking lot. Like,
yes.
Yes.
It's like a little,
it's gated, but it's smack dab right there between where our apartments were and where the parking lot for the movie theater and all the shops are.
There's like seven graves in there.
Was it just part of it?
Because when you watch a scary movie and then you come out of the theater and you're like, "Ooh, there's a cemetery over there." Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Was it just like a family plot for a?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Because sometimes you have to wonder, too, when it comes to a burial ground or area, and there's a cemetery, and it's like in the middle of a city, and it's very built up around it. Oftentimes, there's some graves on the edges that ended up just being too out of place that just ended up getting paved over because they're so far old, no one will know, that sort of thinking. You know, or roads going, there's several I can think of where... It's like in the middle of a city, and there's a road that goes directly through the cemetery, and there's a cemetery on each side. I mean, it was not originally designed like that with the road in the middle. Yeah. So.
Sorry. And you know that maybe not everybody got moved.
Yeah.
That road pretty much leads to a dead end anyway, right?
Sometimes not. Sometimes it just keeps going, but there's mysterious amounts of accidents or issues on those stretches where those roads sit. But that's always an interesting thing when it comes to cemetery placement. So how interesting. So you guys, you know, you both kind of found this passion, this interest, these abilities that are there. How did this continue to develop, and how did this kind of turn into more of, okay, we have this interest and this passion, but, you know, let's do something with it. You know, what was your goal when starting to think about ghost hunting? You know, was it, you know, let's try and help people. Let's just go have fun and see what we find. What were your thoughts at the beginning?
Yeah, I think it started out with let's go and have fun. Our very first haunted location we went to was a doozy. It was Ohio State Reformatory. And we went with a group of about 50 people. It was like sort of a bus tour. And we walked through there. And I just felt like this was it. I am hooked. And this is what I want to do. This is It was the most incredible place I've ever been to. And I remember the lady, one of the tour guides was talking about this spirit that was seen a lot at Mansfield. And she said, we call him Mr. Anderson. And no sooner she said that than it popped in my head. And I turned to my mom and to Matt and said, he doesn't like to be called that. His name is Frank. And knowing nothing about this place other than it was a prison.
Yeah.
We left there and my mom called me the next day and she said, hey, you know, what was the name of that guy? And I said, Frank. And she said, well, there was a prison guard who was beat to death and his name was Frank. And that just hooked me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I have got to do this. And so poor Matt, I dragged him everywhere, but I think he was a skeptic for a long time, but too many things have happened now to him too, things that we can't explain at these locations we go to, that doors closing at Mansfield and cell doors sliding shut and voices that we hear with our own ears that, you know, nobody's there.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Mansfield obviously is a good place to start for anybody because there's just so much there. But the two experiences I can tell you about, one was, you know, doing an EVP session and you're walking around with a tape recorder, you're talking to thin air, you feel like an idiot, really, you know, and, but then when you play it back and it's an intelligent answer to your question, then you're like, okay, there is something to this. And that kind of opened my eyes. But we had somebody who was brand new to ghost hunting and we took him to Mansfield and he was just like pumped up. And so he wanted him and I to go and do to go investigate a room off the cell block.
Yeah.
So him and I were there and there's two other investigators and boys being boys, we decided to really, I don't normally provoke, but something inside me said, you know, let's just say some stuff to see if we can get a reaction. And we said some pretty raw stuff. Well, the chain link wall in that room, first of all the REM pods that the other group had all went off.
The motion sensors.
They all went off. And then the thing started to shake. It didn't shake like a wind, it shook it like somebody was angry. And we all saw this and the guy that I was with ran back to Laura and says, oh my God, this is incredible, I'm hooked now. And I couldn't explain it either. So yeah, that kind of sealed the deal for me.
Sure. And you said you were kind of like shouting out things, kind of provoking. Is that something that you still do? Or is that something that you did early on because you didn't know any better?
Well, I knew better, but I figured we all wanted to get a reaction because, you know, just to see. It was just kind of like an experiment.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
We're not normally the type who will, you know, provoke when we're in a location. especially one of our absolute favorite locations to go to is Madison Seminary in Madison, Ohio. And in that, a lot of tragedies happened there, and there was a state-funded asylum. You can imagine the kinds of things that went on in places like that. And we never provoke in places like
that. Respectful.
We feel you need to be respectful. And sure. And it always, I don't know, we seem to have pretty good luck with that when we take that approach.
Sure. Tell me more about the seminary and give me more of the history of what's gone on there.
Well, it is it's currently owned by Adam Kimmel, who also owns Fairfield County Infirmary, and he manages Indiana State Sanatorium. And it was you can help me here. Historically, half of the building was built to house, well, it was started out as a seminary, I'm sorry, for boys, a boys'
not
seminary.
Not a religious seminary in the sense, it was more okay. Like a higher education.
Higher education, because most of those kids were going into that field. So they would educate them there. Then it turned into a co-ed school. And then from there, it became a place where widows of Civil War soldiers, widows and families of Civil War soldiers that were killed would live because they were misplaced or displaced. And so they would come there and live their time out there. And then another side of that was built, and that building housed
mental hospital.
It was a mental hospital, an asylum, state-funded asylum. And so there, you can imagine the gamut of emotion that has happened in that location over the years.
Yeah.
It's really an amazing place. We've gotten actually pictures of shadow figures in the rooms at Madison Seminary, sort of sitting on the bed or walking down the hall, and pictures of a guy in a doorway kind of pointing at us and, you know, telling us stay out of here because he doesn't like visitors in his room.
Yeah.
And just great experiences. There's a room in the historical side, the Civil War side, where there's a dining room kind of set up, and we were just there 2 weeks ago and for my birthday, and everybody sang happy birthday to me in that room. And I've never experienced this anywhere before, but every piece of equipment we had started lighting up after they were done singing. So it was an incredible experience for us all.
When you first walk into a place like that, and when you've never been there before, and there's so many things, what do you feel first? Do you feel whoever may be by you at that moment? Is it an overwhelming feeling? Is it like a feeling of just a lot of different energy, and you got to kind of deface who exactly is what? What is it like?
Well, what they do usually when you go into a place like that, they like to give you a tour.
Sure.
And the group will go. Laura won't go on the tour. This is the weird bit. Laura won't go on the tour. She'll walk around by herself. I'll walk with her, and she'll just walk around, just kind of get a feel, her own feel for the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll start discovering things, her feelings, and then she'll ask, "Oh, such and such happened in here, or I feel something happened in here." And the guide will be like, "Well, yeah, that's what happened."
Or my team, my team will always go on the tours, which I love to ask them to go on the tours. And then when we're going through, and if I feel something, they'll confirm it for me, or they'll say, yeah, this is where the tour guide said this happened.
Sure.
Or something like that. But I absolutely don't want to know anything when I walk into a place. The very first thing I feel when I go into those places is emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put out the feelers to feel people or spirits yet, but I will open up to feel the emotions. So I try to gauge what we're walking into first. And then when we go to different spaces within that building, then I will open up and kind of say, all right, here I'm feeling there's little ones, or, you know, kids are running around, or there's a lady who was pregnant who's looking for something, or just things like that. And I can open up and see visions and I just try to kind of let it come in stages. Start with the emotions, then move into the person, then kind of see what their story is.
So what did it feel like for you? What were those first emotions you were feeling when you walked in there?
Wow, at Madison.
Well, it depends on each place.
Well, at Madison, it was... It depends on... Honestly, it depends on what floor you go on.
Okay.
When you go onto the asylum floor, you feel... First, you feel this sort of chaos feeling. And then you feel just hopelessness. But if you go down the hall to where the rooms are, that sort of changes and you feel a little bit of everything. You feel some anger. You feel some sadness. It can be really overwhelming, but I feel like I owe it to the people that are there to go through it, to be able to tell some stories for them or to relay how they're feeling or what they're feeling and why, if they're so inclined to let me see that. And downstairs in Madison, it's just a whole different feeling. And even in the historical side, it's not tragic. It's more, you know, a community sense, a sense of belonging, a sense of, you know, having the kids there and feeling like it was a good place to be. So sure. It depends on where we go. I know when we went to Waverly Hills Sanatorium, that was probably the toughest place to walk into.
Why?
Because that feeling of utter loss and helplessness and sorrow and just hopelessness. It sure. Penetrates the walls in Waverly Hills. It Waverly Hills was a tuberculosis hospital.
Sure.
And it's I can't even, I'm like almost at a loss for words to explain how deep and intense that feeling was the minute I walked in there. It was difficult to even investigate in there for me.
He didn't help either.
Well, it was hot, but really had nothing to do with the intensity of the feelings there. They're really imbued in the walls in that place like nothing I've ever experienced.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Matt and Laura. In part two, are locations like Mansfield more haunted because of tourism? Are the spirits being caged as more and more locations become haunted attractions? And what paranormal activity did April experience at a Titanic Museum exhibit? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or visit thegravetalks.com. There you'll get access to all of our episodes in their entirety, part one, part two, and no ads, commercial free. You can binge away on it at any time. Get access to all of the episodes. We do greatly appreciate that support. Again, patreon.com/thegravetalks or search The Grave Talks on the Patreon app. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.